Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Is anybody else super duper busy out there in the world? OMG. I am so busy, I don't even know what to do. I'm running a constant 2 or 3 minutes late. And that's speeding in my car, that's running up the stairs, that's waving at people instead of stopping and talking to them, but I am one busy guy. That's all I can tell you. So I have a feeling that that's just the entrepreneur's life. And I've been that way all of my life. I've been an entrepreneur for 40 years. Actually longer, but I don't want to give away my age. Okay, I'm 62. But I've been an entrepreneur forever. Even in high school, I was buying and selling stuff. And I'm telling you what, to this very day, my friends that I went to high school with, you know, you go to the high school reunion, 10, 20, 30. Oh, geez, it starts getting way out there. But they're like, so what are you doing today, Alan? I'm like, I don't know. You know, I buy and sell all kinds of property. Now I'm doing, you know, commercial real estate. It's fun. But you got to run. And, you know, I mean, I go through assistants and I get this really good assistant and then she's gone. And I get a guy and then he get a really good assistant and he's gone. And then I get two assistants and then they get into a fight and then something going. Anyway, there's always something. So Sissy Hsiao is joining us. She's the vice president of and general manager of Google Assistant. This is a voice assistant. And we're going to call this segment Finding Your Voice. Sissy, welcome to the show. So you now know what kind of a guy I am. And I'm sure that you deal with a lot of entrepreneurs that are wanting to know more about your Google Assistant. But I'm just curious. I mean, this is kind of a new, from what I understand, a new job for you or a new part of your job over there at Google. Give us a little bit about Google Assistant and what you think is so cool about it to begin with here.
So Google Assistant is designed to help busy people like you. You know, that frazzled feeling that you were talking about where you're running behind and trying to do things at once. Yeah. That's exactly what we're trying to help you with Google Assistant. We want to build a natural and conversational helper to help you get things done.
Now, I don't drink, I don't take drugs, but I do slur my words when I start, trying to do 9 things at once. How good, when you talk about a voice assistant, how good is it at recognizing what I'm saying if I'm not, you know, if I'm not like really enunciating? I'm just curious about that.
Well, that's a great question. And in fact, you as a podcast person, you're probably better at enunciating than most of the general population in the world.
Right. But I could get a little crazy. But yes. So tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, people don't speak clearly, and actually people speak with a lot of hesitation. They don't enunciate well, they pause, they change their mind mid-sentence, they interrupt themselves. And so Google Assistant is a technology that wants to understand you regardless of how you speak. So you can be natural. We have users who have actual speech impairments that we're trying to figure out how to understand them. When normal human beings have a hard time understanding them. We have users who speak with accents or speak in mixed languages like Spanish and English, and we're building technology to understand them too. So it's really exciting to be working on this.
So I use Google Calendar. Does it work with the other, I'm sure it does, with the other products that you guys have out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Like people get things done using a variety of different tools, right? Calendar, to-do lists, sending emails and texts while you're in the car. And Google Assistant is integrated with those different types of tools so you can get those things done even when you can't use your fingers and are tapping away at your screen.
Tell us a little bit, I'm just curious about your background, Sissy, because Google, such a universe. I've never been to Google, but I know friends that have been to the headquarters. And it's like, how do you describe Google? I remember when it started, and now today, it's like a universe.
Oh, my gosh. Where do I start? Well, I've been almost at Google for 16 years.
Wow.
So I basically grew up. I think when I joined the company, I was like employee 5,000, and we're in the hundreds of thousands of Googlers now.
Wow.
When I first visited Google, I felt like it was like Disneyland for software engineers.
Right.
There was like volleyball courts and pet dinosaurs and hanging rockets. And it was a pretty crazy. And like, basically the micro kitchens looked like 7-Eleven. You could basically eat anything you wanted. But yeah, you know, Google is a really big place. And what's kept me here is just that ability to build stuff that changes the world.
Cool. That's a great place to take a break. We're talking with Sissy Hsiao. She is the vice president and general manager assistant at Google. This is a voice assistant. You know, there's other ones out there, but and Google's been out there with theirs for evidently like 6 years. So as an entrepreneur, we're going to talk next about some of the cool things that the Google Assistant can help you with, because we all need ideas of how to be more efficient. Don't go anywhere. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
Stay with me. I love it. Love game, intuition, play the cards with spades to start. And after he's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on his heart. Oh, 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 oh.
Well, you're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. I'm an entrepreneur. I have been all of my life. I remember my lemonade stand when I was like, oh my gosh, hold on. It would have been 1965. And a motorcycle cop pulls up to get some lemonade, of course. But I thought I was going to jail. So I ran into the house. Get the hell out of here. I'm going to jail. And my mom kind of took me back out. And she's like, did my son do something wrong? He goes, no, I just wanted to get a cup of lemonade. So I have been an entrepreneur my whole life. And today we live in this, gosh, this virtual reality digital world where you have these virtual assistants and voice assistant and, of course, Google Assistant. We're talking with Sissy Hsiao, and she's the vice president, general manager of Google Assistant. Finding your voice is what we're talking about here. My question for you, the next one, Sissy, is, you know, I've been to some of these big tech companies, and our human brains, we have, you know, we kind of perceive what a big company like Google is. And since I've only seen science fiction movies, I always kind of perceive these big, like Google is like this big, you know, planet that's floating in the universe out there somewhere, and it just information's coming out of it. But that story that you told about when you first started working there and it was fun, that's life. That's life happening. And as entrepreneurs, life keeps happening. A little while ago, somebody called me and they said, can you come do this now? And I'm like, no, I can't. I got to go interview the lady from Google. And he's like, but no, we got to go do it now. I said, I can't. Can we do it like in an hour? Okay. So everybody starts rearranging their schedules. You know what I mean? Because nobody's schedule meshes with somebody else's. How many times do we all try and schedule a meeting? And it's like, oh my God, it takes 30 emails to get five people to schedule themselves on, you know, together. So life happens. What I want to know is, can you use Google Assistant? And do people use it as also part of their day-to-day life? Or is this a business tool? Just curious.
Yeah, you know, I think business life and personal life is all a blur.
It is.
You know, I'm taking this call from my home right now because I was working from home today. And, you know, in between juggling meetings and appointments and, you know, booking camp for my kids, there's a lot going on.
Exactly.
Home and work life are merging, and the assistant endeavors to help you save those precious minutes that you need. I talked to a customer. She was like, you know, those minutes add up. Every time I use the assistant to remind me to feed the cats or remind me to water the plants, or I need to put this dentist appointment on the calendar before I forget, and I just tell my voice assistant and she just does it for me. Those minutes all add up. Yeah. And that's personal and that's work too.
I agree. And I try to tell my friends all the time, like, and excuse my way of saying this, but it's like, dude, you have a phone in your hand. Use it. It's more than just a phone. It's a complete computer that has more computing technology than what went to the moon in 1968 by about a billion times. I don't know how many times, but you know what I'm saying? It's like these little devices we carry around with us are amazing. And people forget. You just named off some really simple ones. I actually have a herd of cows, and I have alpaca. I have six alpaca. And, you got to get the alpaca sheared before a certain time. Otherwise, they get too hot. You got to make sure you feed the cows, and you got to make sure you get, vitamin lick for them. I am reminding myself all the time using these kinds of assistants that you're talking about, voice assistants, because we have such amazing, effective lives if we use the tools that folks like yourself over at Google with this voice assistant are putting out into the world. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is a no-brainer. I mean, one more segment with you. When we come back, you get to be the professor and teach Entrepreneur 101. So whatever, you better get ready, because whatever you want to talk about, it's your turn. How can people use Google Assistant finding their voice to become more efficient entrepreneurs? We're talking about it, but I'm sure you may have some brilliant things to say. So I'm going to give you the stage. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. We'll be right back.
I say, oh, watching them fall. Never heard.
How would you like a playbook when a playbook doesn't exist? Simon Leslie's new book, Equanimity, A Diary of CEOs in Crisis, might just answer some of those unanswered questions about life and business. Like, how do I get love back in my business or relationship? How do I find love in what I do? How do I stop underpaying myself and working 90 hours a week? How do I learn to be present at work, at home, and find time for me? How do I attract better and bigger opportunities? And how to be a heart-centered leader? 50 conversations with some of the greatest minds on kindness, heart-centered leadership, negotiation, gratitude, energy, mindfulness, and many, many more. If you don't believe me, just follow Simon Leslie on LinkedIn and read his monthly exploits. He really is living a wonderful life of love, adventure, and success. Equanimity is available on Amazon.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
I have been beamed up, Scotty, to the gigantic planet called Google. Sissy Shao is joining us, Vice President, General Manager, Assistant at Google. And I am, what are we, 8 miles above the Earth, floating in the Google planet? No, I'm joking. Listen, I love meeting people at these organizations, these big ones like Google and other ones that I get to talk to, because you folks are just people too, and you have lives too. And you and I were talking in the commercial break about how we're so connected to these supercomputers, and this is where, you know, these voice assistants like Google Assistant come in real handy. Maybe you could talk to that, Sissy.
Yeah, I think, mobile devices are just so powerful, like you said. But I don't know if you ever had this experience, but when you get, sucked into your phone, do you feel like it's like this vortex where, 2 hours has gone by and you don't know where it went?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Usually it's a smack in the head by my wife. But yes, continue.
It's like the FOMO, right? I need to do this task or a chore for work. I need to send an email, and all of a sudden I'm scrolling through my feed.
Right.
And so I think the Google Assistant is a way to get things done without having to be sucked into that vortex. I talked to a woman who uses the Google Assistant. She said, I don't want to go to my phone to do that task. Like, if I can do it through my voice, then I can keep combing my daughter's hair and we're hanging out in the living room, and I'm not going to get sucked into that like whole universe of the supercomputer.
And even the watch, right? If you have a Google, the watch that is connected to this whole thing, that would work as well, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We envision like you're talking to your supercomputer through your wrist and you don't need to pull that phone out. I actually bike home from work sometimes and I need to tell my husband, hey, I'm going to be home in 25 minutes. Like, my phone's in my backpack and I just talk to my wrist and I've sent the email or the message to him.
Yeah, this is really pretty simple. I mean, it just makes sense. So I want to shift just a little bit and talk about leadership skills. I mean, this whole show is about entrepreneurs. And so here you are at the big giant company, Google. Maybe we could talk about your general philosophy on building teams, because you've been there for so long now. It's just natural to you. For me, I would walk up, my jaw would be hanging down like, whoa, this is Google. But it's like your family there. What's your philosophy when it comes to building teams? How do you pull people out of that mindset and bring them back down to earth?
The thing about Google Assistant and voice technologies in general is that everybody kind of can tell you what it should really look like. You were using the Star Trek analogy, beam me up, Scotty. Like, right. There's a computer there that you talk to in Star Trek.
Right.
Or, you know, Tony Stark has Jarvis. And, you know, we want to build that, but, like, the raw materials aren't there yet. So building the right team, I am hiring for people who are what I think of as pragmatic dreamers, which are two dichotomous words, right? You think about a dreamer, head in the clouds, like thinking about the future, what does it look like? But like the pragmatism is like, I don't have all the materials I need to build this super Star Trek computer yet. So what do I have the materials to build, and what is the right attitude of working with the material so that I can build an assistant that's useful for you today?
Right. Do you have any secrets? I mean, because you're a productivity genius with this thing, Google Assistant. What are your secrets beyond that? Because then there's the human factor, right?
Absolutely. I think hiring for the right attitude is so key. One of the attitudes that I look for in my interview panels is humility. Mm. I just think if you come thinking I'm the best technologist and I already know all the things and I know what this thing can do and I have a fixed mindset on it, that's not the right person for the team. I look for people who are humble and have creative curiosity and are willing to work with other people who are experts and admit what they don't know, but are still there to like work together to build an amazing, magical product. So humility is really important for me.
I love that. Creative curiosity, something that is being beaten out of too many people these days out of fear. My question for you then is if you have any personal advice for somebody, for leaders that are listening to this that want to try and achieve. I mean, 16 years at Google, my goodness, that's success in my book. And especially to be leading this team for Google Assistant. Any advice?
Well, I mean, I would say deliver real value to people. Focus on what value you're building for people in the world. How are you going to make people's lives better? What is the actual value? And focus on that and get your team focused on that. That would be my number one piece of advice.
I love it. I love it. I love how you're just one of us. And that is so important. I think too many entrepreneurs, they have dreams, but they don't give themselves permission to be successful to the level that they should. And because maybe they've doubted themselves along the way. But what I hear coming from you is a human factor that I have to say this. There needs to be more of that in big corporations. I mean, who says that? What I look for is humility. I love that personally. Sissy Hsiao, thank you for talking with us. And I think that, of course, this Google Assistant is a kind of a no-brainer. I love it. Beautiful. Well done.
Thanks, Alan, for having me. Delighted to have had this chat with you.
Keep up the good work. Keep looking for humble people. Humility is such a beautiful thing. Assistant.google.com if you want more information on it. Sissy Hsiao. Coming up next, we're going to talk, Mike Etchert. He's got, what do you mean he's got interviews? Oh, Mike Etchert's got interviews. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Alan Taylor from Entrepreneur Weekly. Child sexual exploitation is an unimaginable crime that continues to invade our communities and homes. The Maloof Foundation is confronting this crime by providing education, promoting healing, and ensuring justice for survivors. But this cause can't be won alone. Learn how you can join the Maloof Foundation in their efforts to preserve a child's right to freedom, hope, justice, and dignity at MaloofFoundation.org. That's M-A-L-O-U-F Foundation.org.
Oh, Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Hey, welcome everyone to the second half of the Entrepreneur Weekly radio show. My name is Mike Etchart. Alan Taylor has been kind enough to hand me the baton and hang out here because I'm at the NAMM show here in Anaheim, California. And when one goes to the NAMM show, it's a trade show for the music products world. There's no better person to be hanging out with than this handsome gentleman next to me. He is Dennis Houlihan, former president of NAMM. And what is your, I can't quite read your badge.
Past chair.
Past chair.
It's better than past stool, I think.
Yes, it is, every day of the week. And then you are also the former president of Roland US.
Correct.
Which is a very huge company. And not only that, but you're also a person who really knows the history of this musical instrument world.
I've grown up at this event and in this industry, and so it's always fun to get to see you, and you know, welcome to Anaheim, welcome to the NAMM show.
Yes, we are 2.5 years removed from the last one.
Correct.
And
a long 2.5 years.
It's been a long 2.5 years, but I am so happy to be back, happy to see you, happy to see 1,000 of my closest friends that are milling around.
Hopefully
right now.
There's more than 1,000 of your closest friends.
I think there are. I think there might be. As I was driving over here, because this, of course, is Entrepreneur Weekly Radio, I was thinking about when I first got into music as a high school kid, playing in a band, and the things that I lusted after music gear-wise. I wanted a Hammond organ and a Leslie speaker. Hammond organ was developed by Lorenz Hammond.
Correct.
The Leslie speaker by Don Leslie.
Right.
I wanted a Fender Stratocaster, Leo Fender. Started just down the road here in Orange County,
yeah,
in Fullerton. I wanted a Marshall amplifier, Jim Marshall, a UK...
wonderful guy.
Wonderful guy. I wanted an Oberheim synthesizer.
Ooh.
Tom Oberheim. Yeah. What is it about this business and these entrepreneurial figures that dominate... And these companies still exist, by the way. Their founders may have passed away, but this is a business where you've got these tinkerers. You've got these folks that just... They get the itch and they create these small companies that get big fast. It seems like it's a very welcoming industry to entrepreneurs.
It is. And if you go backwards and look at the music products industry, not just in the United States, let's go back to its European roots.
Mm-hmm.
For people who are interested in violins, you wouldn't go to the violin store. You'd find the luthier or the craftsman who could carve the violin and finish it. And you would buy this piece of art that was capable of making this beautiful sound. The most famous maker, Stradivarius. Yes. I mean, they're like, wow, you know. But there wasn't mass production. There weren't factories. These were handcrafted, individual, one-off kind of things that lent to that entrepreneurial spirit. And that migrated across the Atlantic into the United States. And some of the earliest makers of musical instruments were piano makers. And they weren't making thousands. They were maybe lucky to make 100 pianos by hand in their workshops. Mason and Hamlin, Steinway
and Sons.
And that entrepreneurial spirit helped make those instruments as special as they were, as special as they are. And today there's a whole new world of, I call them technology entrepreneurs, like Tom Oberheim with the Oberheim synthesizer, Bob Moog with the Moog synthesizer. And these guys were frequently thought of as just this is a strange dude who's out of his mind who makes something that makes strange sounds. Well, hello, Switched On Bach.
Yes.
And the rest is history.
Indeed,
know?
A very famous album from the late 1960s.
That's right.
Yeah.
With Wendy Carlos.
Yes.
You know, just amazing. Repositioned how people thought about synthesizers. And you walk around this show and there's a small group of people. Those were the folks that used to be down in Hall E in the lower level.
Which is for the small upstart companies.
Yeah, and yes. I love to go down there. And I was just walk carefully because you could see those folks are going to make it upstairs.
Yeah.
That's going to grow. And now, although NAMM is not occupying Hall E this year, there's lots of room and space to do that. But some smaller software companies that, as music software becomes an important part of today's production environment, some of these small companies, small ideas that make huge, huge differences.
Yes.
There's a product here called Farplay. And it's designed to reduce latency over the internet.
I think I saw them over. They're just around the corner here.
Yeah, and you know, we all are used to Zoom meetings.
Yes, unfortunately.
But doing music on Zoom is not a pleasant experience,
right?
Because the latency is critically interfering with quality musical experiences. But these software products, and Farplay being one of them, the latency is reduced to like 10 milliseconds.
Wow.
Which is pretty doggone close to being spot on. And I've watched the demo for Farplay, and the pianist is in Paris, the singer is in Switzerland. And so he just says, one, two, three, clap. And the singer is going, one, two, three, clap. And it's like, this isn't going to work. You know, they run it through Farplay, one, two, three, and they're both clapping at the same time. And then she sings, and he played, and it's like, this really works. This is very cool. And there's a couple of examples of that around the show. I had a chance to hear a version of the performance I saw this morning by Eric Whitaker in this amazing virtual choir with live string players and live pianist in sync due to, I think, Jack Sprint, I think is what that software was. Mm-hmm. And it all lined up. And it was like, this is really cool.
Wow.
Still singers singing and players playing, but the latency had reduced to a point that it was unidentifiable. It was perfect.
And what a huge soundscape that opens up in terms of collaborating with people around the world.
Yeah, and particularly in today's world, there's still a high degree of speculation. Is it safe to be here at the NAMM show?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that NAMM has worked very hard to increase the aisle sizes, so social distancing is paramount. There are masks all over if people want to choose a mask. There's actually, I believe, on badges, there's a yellow, green, and red dot system.
That's right.
I missed all three of those badges.
I don't have either.
But
so.
It's fun to see how some people, they're backing up. You know, don't touch me.
Yes.
Okay? Other people are eager to do
fist bump
or elbow bumping. And other people say, bring it on.
They're back.
It's fascinating to see NAMM has worked hard to create that kind of safe environment so people can come. Retailers and their salespeople can come here, see new products, and feel safe going home, that they'll be healthy, and they can continue to sell musical instruments to their local markets safely, healthy. And that entrepreneurial spirit is here in all different ways. I mean, we're sitting, the benefit of sitting next to a very big company, Harman,
mm-hmm.
that is one of the most respected names in audio worldwide.
For sure.
But 20 feet from here, there's going to be a small startup entrepreneur that has a new idea on how to make a sexy microphone at a good price. Now, probably making the first ones by hand. I love that because that's the basis. That's the bones of the music products industry because these large companies didn't happen overnight. Steinway didn't become who they are, you know, in a couple of years. It took decades.
Decades.
Yamaha is now gigantic. It started out very small with reed organs.
Right.
And it's fun to see where the genesis, where the roots of some of these companies are. And Harman at one point was a very small company. Now it's a giant in the industry. And that's one of the beautiful things about the music products industry, particularly the entrepreneurs who have been able to make their mark and grow their businesses, create careers for people, and create products that let musicians compose, create, and perform wonderful music that keeps getting better all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's the true entrepreneurial spirit that comes to play here for all the listeners of Entrepreneur Radio.
Well, and what I think is also fun, very interesting, is that some of those things I mentioned, like the Hammond organ and the Moog synthesizer, the creators of those products were not musicians.
Correct.
You know, and so you've got people that just have an idea, and they may or may not play, but they have the wherewithal or the sense or the passion or the drive to just kind of bring it to market. So on that note, Dennis, let's take a quick break. We are at the NAMM show. I'm with Dennis Houlihan. We are hanging out. It's kind of loud here, but that's the fun part about it, right? Lots of people talking, wandering around, musicians. It is wild.
And when we come back, I'm going to ask you a trick question.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, let's see how we do. So hang with us. We're coming right back. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. Mike Etchart with Dennis Houlihan at the NAMM show in Anaheim. It's the music products trade show, which hasn't been held for 2.5 years. Dennis and I are giddy about being back.
Delighted to be back.
Yes. Now, you said, you teased a second ago, that you're going to give me a trick question.
Okay. You mentioned Hammond organs on your wish list.
Yes.
And it was created by Lawrence Hammond. Do you know what Mr. Hammond's first successful product was?
It was either the synchronous clock or it was the bridge table.
The synchronous clock.
Right. And then he also invented a bridge table.
Yes.
And that was, as I understand it, when
a synchronous clock was desirable in like the 1920s because of the different power systems.
Correct.
Right? It was relatively early in electricity history.
And that stabilizing synchronous motor helped create the drawbars or the oscillating tone wheels that led to the drawbars, the famous Hammond sound, which can all be traced back to the Hammond clock because that was so ubiquitous on people's mantles in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, they're beautiful clocks.
Oh, yeah, and you know, that was pretty slick when you had an electric clock on your mantle.
Well, and that, you know, as we talk about the Hammond organ, it's interesting to note when you're an entrepreneur and when you are creating products just out of your creative mind, that sometimes they go to places you could not have imagined.
Very true.
And so, of course, Lorenz Hammond's idea was to basically make an electric pipe organ.
Correct.
Because pipe organs, of course, were huge and were expensive. And his idea at the time was really institutional. So churches and funeral parlors, things like that. They were very expensive, about $1,200 when the Model A came out in 1935-ish. About the cost
of a Buick. You know your Hammond history very well.
I do. But along the way, gospel churches started using it.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I mean, from what I've heard, and he died in the early 70s, I think,
correct,
right?
Correct.
And he really kind of hated rock and roll and jazz and performers. That wasn't his thing. And yet, that's where the Hammond organ went. So be careful what you create, because once it's out of your control, it goes places where you couldn't have imagined.
There's a wonderful story about Mr. Hammond and the early start of the Hammond Organ Company. And they had some pretty aggressive marketing people who said the Hammond organ can make, you know, 7,200,000 some number sounds. And a large pipe organ builder filed a suit against Hammond and said, no, that's not possible. That's a gross exaggeration and you're misleading the public. And it ended up, the way I was told, in a demo at the University of Chicago in the chapel on the campus of the University of Chicago. They had a wonderful pipe organ, and Hammond brought in their Model A, and the judge was there. I think it was it was not a jury trial. The pipe organ played some different sounds, and the person playing the Hammond organ started making different sounds and making different sounds and making different sounds. It's my understanding that the suit was thrown out
right
because
there.
The judge was convinced they can make all these sounds, so go away kind of routine.
And wasn't there another lawsuit against Hammond by saying you can't call it an organ?
Right.
And he won that one as well.
Yes.
And so, you know, and it's so, and there's a Hammond, the Hammond Organ Company is now owned by a Japanese company called Suzuki.
Right.
So it's Hammond Suzuki, but they're still around. We still strive for that sound that the Hammond organ makes. And again,
absolutely.
But not because we are in a church or an institution, because of the pop and rock and soul and hip hop and all of that music that we grew up listening to the Hammond organ sound in.
As a testimony, again, to the entrepreneurial spirit, or particularly the American spirit of entrepreneurship when it comes to the music products industry, so many of the original Hammond organ products built in the 30s and 40s are still playing today because they were built like battleships.
Indeed.
And they may need a little oil on the mechanism that moves the tone wheels, but non-destructo, and you realize that when you go to move one of those.
Well, yeah, they're heavy.
And you're not fathering children anymore.
That's right.
After that.
They are heavy, but that's right. They were built to last.
And they have lasted.
Yes.
And that sound has lasted, but it's always fun for me to see an older Hammond organ that's been well and lovingly maintained.
Cared for.
And it still sounds magical. It really does.
And on that note, we are going to take a quick break for a commercial. Dennis Houlihan and I will be right back after these words from the NAMM Show in Anaheim, California. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
Hello.
Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Mike Etchart with Dennis Houlihan at the NAMM Show in Anaheim. It's the Music Products Trade Show, which hasn't been held for 2.5 years. Dennis and I are giddy about being back.
Delighted to be back. It's fun to me to come back and walk through the aisles of the show and go, I remember when they were downstairs. Now they're upstairs.
Yes.
And they used to be 10 by 10. Now it's 10 by 20. They have a much larger booth.
Exactly.
That's right. Which is good. It's good for the business. It's good for family music centers that are local community-based music stores mm-hmm. that can offer all these products to people in their community and not just sell them the products, but teach them how to play it, teach them how to use it, so they can grow into products rather than grow out of products.
Right. And we should also mention the NAMM show, the first NAMM show was 1901.
Correct.
So we're talking about a trade show that's been around for 121 years.
Yes. We should mention NAMM, N-A-M-M, is the acronym for National Association of Music Merchants.
Yes.
And NAMM actually started as a group of piano dealers in New York who were attempting to stop some pretty unsavory practices in the piano business with bad pricing and overinflated comments about pianos and how they were constructed and that kind of stuff. And so a group of merchants got together and created this association to say, this is how a piano should be built and this is what it should cost or something like that. And it grew over time, and other manufacturers of different products said, we want to join this thing, and that's how it morphed into National Association of Music Merchants. And it exists today as the largest trade association in the world, representing the people who design, manufacture, make, distribute, and sell music products all over the world.
And one of the trivia questions that I always appreciate is, you know, for years I did the CES show, the Consumer mm-hmm. Electronics Show, and that actually started. NAMM is here in Anaheim, but that's what, since the mid-70s?
I'm trying to remember.
So it used to be in Chicago. Chicago was really the hub of musical instruments.
Right. Started in New York, uh-huh. and then the industry migrated to Chicago.
Okay.
Hammond Organ.
That's right.
The Wurlitzer Company. Kimball.
Again, the names of the founders.
Right. Yeah. All, and eventually, the industry migrated to the West Coast because you had companies like Yamaha and Kawai and other Japanese or Taiwanese or Chinese port of entry. And it also coincided with the rise in Hollywood for entertainment for both audio and video.
Sure.
So it was a natural migration, which is how NAMM ended up in Carlsbad, California. If you're ever driving to San Diego and you see the flower fields on the left-hand side,
NAMM is
the building at the top there. But NAMM is the acronym for National Association of Music Merchants. And when it was based in Chicago at the beloved Conrad Hilton Hotel, the Consumer Electronics Show started in the basement of the NAMM show. Because think about it. Back in the 40s and 50s, if you wanted to buy a record player for your home or maybe even a television, you ended up at the music store.
That's right.
Because here's the record player in the cabinet that matched the buffet
the furniture.
And the dining room.
Yeah, right. It was a furniture item.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's funny how it started there, and the CES show has grown into its own wonderful entity.
Monster.
Yeah, yeah. One of the largest trade shows, if not the largest trade show in the world.
Yeah. Yes. It's massive. But of course, and when this show started back in 1901, there was no radio, there was no television. So the home entertainment was music and musical instruments, you know, in the pre-record players, of course.
And you see how technology, even entrepreneurial-driven technology, the development of the transistor or the vacuum tube, how that created generations of products that were sold by entrepreneurial retailers in local music stores across the country. The home organ business is a wonderful example of that. Somebody had an idea and was able to make it into something, and NAMM became the gestation market to grow these ideas into tangible products and viable businesses.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, Dennis, we need to say sayonara because we've come to the end of our segment here. But thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. My pleasure. Good to see you.
It's always great to see you. And thanks for listening, folks, to Entrepreneur Weekly Radio. We certainly appreciate Alan Taylor letting Dennis and I take over the baton for the afternoon. So on that note, folks, have a great week. We will see you next time on Entrepreneur Weekly.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.